Welcome, pleasure lovers, to another episode on the Pleasure Talks podcast. I'm so excited about this one. We have an amazing guest, Dr. Carolyn Hartridge. I'm really excited about this one. We're going to be talking about medicinal cannabis, research in the cannabis industry, and most importantly, sexual health. So get your joints ready, get comfortable. It's going to be a really juicy one. And I'm so excited. Thank you guys for tuning in to another episode. Pleasure Talks is a podcast series simply as a platform for women to share their stories from doctors to patients to even cannabis enthusiasts on cannabis and sexual health and everything in between. So just as a disclaimer, we're not here to diagnose, treat, or cure for cannabis. It's just as a disclaimer, we're just here to share stories. So thank you so much for another episode. We're going to just dive right in. Dr. Carolyn Hartridge, I'm so excited that you're here today. Thank you so much for taking some time off just to talk about cannabis and pleasure with me. I'm really excited about that. So let's just start off as a nice icebreaker. So tell us a little bit about yourself and your work that you do today.
Thanks so much for having me. Interesting times, and I'm glad we can connect, even if it is just via Zoom. So we know each other through the cannabis community. I am a general practitioner in the New York area, and I focus on plant-based nutrition, cannabis, and osteopathic manipulation. And I have a lot of things that I incorporate into my concierge practice. So within that, my patients have inspired me to develop a CBD product line as well. So I kind of split my time in between my private practice and the product line, and then working with a few different nonprofits.
That's amazing. And I love that you're also based on the East Coast in New York City, in New York. That must have been very interesting, because I know in New York there's still it's a very heavy stigma, I guess, on cannabis, even though it is very commonly used, especially in the medical side of things. So how was that really entering the cannabis space, I guess, or how did you really discover cannabis?
You know, what you point out in the terms of the stigma in the medical community in New York around cannabis, I think it's there and it's perhaps waning in its presence. But I was certainly, as much as I love and respect cannabis professionally, didn't really want to have anything to do with it when I first started my practice. I felt like I had worked so long and hard to earn the respect of colleagues, of physicians, and to call myself one of them, that I didn't really want to jeopardize that. And a lot of people just, you know, would reference, oh, those pot doctors, or weed isn't even really medicine. And I was timid to share my real thoughts or my own personal experience. So how did I discover cannabis? I was a patient in California, through chronic pain from kayaking accident. I had hurt my neck through whitewater kayaking and compressed a few vertebrae. And that had left me with some chronic neck pain and shoulder pain. And then I also was later diagnosed with endometriosis. So between the two of those things, I was using cannabis as a patient in California, and really, you know, was able to see both the recreational and medicinal aspects of that, whether it was in kind of a gray space or really above ground in a more medicinal aspect.
I see. Did you find that you were a cannabis patient before you started going into school for medicine or had a practice? Was that accident beforehand?
Yes, that was before.
Yeah, wow.
So, yeah, I was a cannabis patient before I started medicine. I was living in California. I was working at UCSF as a project manager on an NIH grant, and I was applying to medical school. And I was a young mom. I have a kid. So I was looking for something that was more, it had a different benefit to harm ratio. And certainly as a consumer of healthcare, was more likely to go to my acupuncturist or herbalist or massage therapist before I would go and consume traditional Western medicine. So that was something that I was interested in and exploring prior to medicine. During medical school, as I changed my diet, my chronic pain really shifted and it left me in a place where I didn't really require the cannabis medically anymore.
Gotcha. Interesting. I definitely can relate a lot to that. I'm definitely a person that goes to alternative therapies before going to Western medicine. My background's holistic nutrition as well. So I can definitely relate to that. But I think it's so funny how you said, like, growing up, you were like, oh, I don't want to become one of those pot doctors. And now right. You're
and
a doctor.
Even sitting in a dispensary, which is where I met a lot of my close friends from California with whom I still maintain contact. And they joke about, as we're sitting there in the dispensary, like, Caroline can be our prescriber. Caroline can be our pot doc. And I would kind of like brush it off like, no, that's not what I'm going to do with this license. And I guess that shifted because of my patients.
Oh.
So I can take a bit of a tangent into another story, but I think it explains how I went from not wanting to be a pot doctor to being one. When I went into private practice, I quit my job at the hospital and I had patients that left the clinic and came to my private practice. And one of them was a little old lady and she was bedbound and had graduated from hospice twice. So when you're committed to hospice, it means we don't think you're going to live for 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
So she had graduated from that, exceeded those expectations several times, but in the process had been detoxed from a lot of her medications. So she had anxiety and chronic pain for 40, 50, 60 odd years. And while those diagnoses didn't change, even though she was off hospice, she wasn't on a lot of those drugs anymore. So she was still experiencing pain and anxiety, but she wasn't medicated anymore because it had gotten to the point where it was compromising her breathing and we just didn't want to give her those meds.
Gotcha.
So I'm doing house calls and visiting this patient, and I went into private practice in October, and then in January, chronic pain became an acceptable condition for medical cannabis.
Mm-hmm.
So I offered to kind of compromise with her. And I recall the conversation vividly, sitting on her hospital bed in her living room and telling her that the circumstances around this medicine with a very favorable risk to benefit ratio had changed recently. And I knew because of our chatting and her background and the stories she had shared with me that she really wasn't into cannabis or marijuana and really had quite a bit of judgment around it.
Right.
So I told her that I would do something professionally uncomfortable and get certified as a medical cannabis provider if she was willing to do something perhaps personally uncomfortable and explore this alternative medicine source. So we both said, okay, and kind of took a leap of faith together. And I got certified over the weekend and we got her a caregiver because she was bed bound. And then I sat with her again while she medicated for the first time. And I remember sitting on the foot of her bed and watching this 90-pound woman, we're struggling to keep weight on her, and she's kind of curled up and contracted in pain. And she starts to unfurl her limbs and gets a little sassy in her tone and in just her exchanges, and then asks for an insure and a cookie.
I love it.
So I'm watching the medicine work on more things than we had really thought it would. Mm-hmm. And just really had an ego death on her bed. And she looked at me and knew me well enough to realize something was shifting inside of me, and shared that, almost in tears herself, she really needed to apologize to this young man because she grew up on a horse farm and loved her horses, and that was part of her career. And that she had discovered a young boy was growing cannabis plants on the edge of her property, where their two properties abutted. But it was, you know, he was growing the plants on her land. And she was irate and got him in a lot of trouble and was just really offended that he was growing this weed on her land. And she looked at me and took my hand and said, you know, I wish I could call him and apologize because it was medicine.
Mm-hmm.
So that was how I went from kind of, I think, being a patient to really being a provider.
Yeah, most definitely. You answered my next question without even, by just jumping into it. It was really, how has cannabis changed your perspective on medicine? And it's so beautiful, that story of that patient, you know, struggling to fight the stigma, I guess, on cannabis, even while being in so much pain. But to see, I love how when you mentioned her story, it was so quickly that you can see how effective it was. Like, as soon as she used it, she just was able to relax and breathe.
And we were using, she used a sublingual tincture. So just, you know, for people who aren't familiar with the different products, that there was a pretty rapid onset there for her.
Yeah, that's so beautiful. I love that. Definitely what changed my perspective on cannabis was working with patients myself. I think it's such a blessing to see the magic that cannabis can really do. Sorry for like a lack of a better term, but it's so such an amazing plant for so many different reasons.
Yeah, I mean, I think we were both surprised at how many different symptoms it was able to address with one application for her. Yeah. And so I didn't go in promising any of that. You know, we were really talking about an alternative to pain management and perhaps anxiety, just because her anxiety did stem from PTSD and her chronic pain was real chronic and again had an origin we could pinpoint. But we weren't making grand promises even with those two qualifying conditions and the symptoms that they gave her. So to see it so rapidly address pain, anxiety, and then on top of that, you know, encourage or stimulate an appetite, that was really just icing on the cake for us because, you know, we were trying to keep her eating. So not only did it address the conditions it was prescribed to do very well, it surprised us with a few others.
I feel like it just gives, especially people in their last moments in life, a quality life again, you know, not really super drugged up and high on morphine or the point where like they can't eat or take care of themselves. I find that cannabis can really make them feel comfortable in their body again, to at least try to do what they are wanting to. And that's just so empowering at that stage, for sure.
Indeed.
Yeah. So I want to talk a little bit more about your products, the products that you've been using, because we're definitely I want to talk about so many issues with you, especially now that I know that you are also an endometriosis patient. And I know we have a lot of endometriosis patients as well listening to our podcast. It's a huge part of our following. So any tips would be so beautiful for them. And yeah, let's talk more about your product line first.
So certainly two parts to tackle there. The first one, again, it starts with patients. There's some fun stories around why I delved into the world of CBD business. Certainly was not something I would have predicted a few years ago. Kind of on the same level where if you had asked me during medical school, was I going to be a cannabis provider? I would have said, I don't think so. Would ask me during medical school, would you think you'll be an entrepreneur? I doubt it. So this rose out of patient need. I was working in or using office space and working out of a halotherapy spa. So this is dry inhaled sodium chloride microparticles. And it's been used in Europe for decades, and it's really just merging into the American market. And so we had the halotherapy treatments available, and this patient was very much interested in combining halotherapy with cannabis, and she suffered from cystic fibrosis. And everything I knew of on the market at the time was really oil-based. You know, we thought about setting up a volcano in there with treatment or vape pens, and it's just like, it doesn't, none of these things really go with a dry inhaled salt environment. So troubleshooting on her behalf, I thought, who do I know who would have a good understanding, PhD level in chemistry in cannabis? And my sister had a previous life career, and I think really still continues to enjoy the community of the band Phish. Is this familiar to you at all?
No.
Okay. It's kind of like the Grateful Dead, but a little bit different. And I think, you know, major Phish fans would be offended by that comparison. But for those who don't know, it's putting them in kind of the same arena. And traveled around with them, and it's a bunch of modern day hippies. And I thought, among one of them, there's probably a 40-year-old chemist who really knows a lot about cannabis. Yeah. And lo and behold, 2 to 3 degrees of separation, I've been ping-ponged across the country to this PhD and farmer. And he said, well, you know, I'm just sitting on these kilos of isolate nobody really knows what to do with. And it's this dry, powdery stuff. I think it would go with a great application for what you've just described. So we started, for the patient, combining the dry isolate with the halotherapy salts. And she found that this really improved her outcomes when she went to the pulmonologist. Really? So Breathe, one of my products, was born out of that. And from there, other patient demands really inspired the rest of the products. So the EAT was because I had diabetic patients that were looking for low glycemic index edibles. The soak was for my little old ladies who I would, you know, encourage them to do Epsom salt soaks, and they would either email or text or call me afterwards and say, I did, and now, you know, I nearly slipped and broke my hip and I have to call a cleaning lady because there's an oil ridge around the tub and it had all these essential oils and stuff in it. So they were looking for something with really pure ingredients that wouldn't leave their tub a mess, and hence the soak was born. The topical came out of the Canagather community here in New York. When I was launching in all the original products, the audience asked for a topical. I happened to be there with my chemist, and we looked at each other and said, I don't know, 6 to 8 weeks, and we got a topical on the market. I have a lube that was inspired by one of my sister's friends who was recovering from cancer and had some very specific needs. So really every single one of these products has a patient's story behind them.
I love it. Yeah, completely for patients. And I think that's just what I love most about cannabis, is that it has such a compassion model. You know, it's very simple to play with. I love CBD isolate and isolated cannabinoids. I think it's just so easy to work with, and you can put it in your water, have CBD water if you want, put it into an oil. Right. So having,
I want to be, you know, clear and honor the cannabis community, and that I understand the entourage effect. I value that scientifically. And again, and for my patients, they were seeking something that we knew if we introduced it into their regimen would work with their medications. And for me, that was active ingredient that we were adding to their to the regimen. And within that, it's easier for us to control. So that's really, again, for the patients, why I decided the isolate was appropriate. Lie means beautiful, but it might respond differently in you than it would in me. So when you recommend the product to me, it might not have the same effect on you as it would on me.
Right.
So when we're just dealing with the CBD isolate, we can perhaps have a more consistent user outcome.
Mm-hmm. Fair point. That's a great angle. That's totally fair. Yes, I hear the entourage effect all the time, but CBD is still CBD, and it's so beneficial for so many people, like you mentioned. And I'm glad that it came out of the community because, yeah, like just I was talking about the compassion model. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, thanks for reiterating that. So that sounds like a really amazing product line. So that's based in New York. Correct?
Yeah, the company is based in New York. The chemist and a lot of the production comes out of Colorado.
Beautiful.
So we can get product anywhere.
Great. That's amazing. That's what we wanted to know. And I just wanted to ask your thoughts, of course, being a doctor. So what are your thoughts on medicinal versus recreational? Not all states have either, really. Some have one or the other. So what are your real thoughts on the differences right now and some tips that people can just hear on?
Sure. And I think it's really important to highlight that there's recreational and adult use. And even in the states with that, there's still a market for medicinal use. And I think that's really important to point out. So I think, you know, we can start with New York just because I'm here and I'm familiar with it. We have medicinal cannabis here, and I think that's really important because I have patients that admit that they're consuming cannabis from the black market, and they project a lot of their personal values onto their dealers. So if your personal value includes consuming organic dried mulberries or, you know, organic local produce or whatever it might be, and you know and trust your dealer and you've been with them for quite some time, you might assume that your dealer also really values organic cannabis. And you've never really asked to clarify. And when my patients are encouraged to do so, they realize that, you know, 2 to 3, 4, 5, 10 degrees of separation have occurred. And there's really not a guarantee that it wasn't indeed grown in a controlled environment or that it was medical from out of state that they're happening to get on the black market in another state. And that those values are not held by their dealers. And that's really concerning to hear because it's not controlled for mold or pesticides. It could be laced with other things. And they're really relying it on it as a way to self-medicate. Even if they are admitting it, you know, perhaps in their social history or as a more recreational tool, when we zoom out and I'm able to perhaps mirror or reflect back to them how they're using it or consuming it, it might really be more in a medicinal way. It might really be more used as a therapeutic tool than they've originally realized.
Most definitely. I think that's a lot of people kind of seek the value in medicinal after using it recreationally and not really understanding or thinking that it can really be so therapeutic in other areas.
And then, you know, for dosing, I think that's really important when we talk outside a whole flower that needs to be in a controlled environment. Whether it's edibles or tinctures or vaping, you need to know what those ingredients are. There needs to be a COA. And this is all really important, recreational or adult use / recreational. So I really see value in that. And I actually support the extended time New York's taking to approach the adult use or recreational market and legal infrastructure around that, because I feel like a lot of people are going to look to New York once they do that. And we want to do it right. We want to learn from our other states and do something that we're really proud of that supports this perhaps gray space market and can allow them to sustainably compete with some of the other larger players.
Most definitely. And New York is specifically interested in extracts only, correct?
So yeah, we don't have whole flower here available in the medicinal.
For those reasons, like you just mentioned, I think that's great because like I'm a huge advocate for like pharmaceutical grade quality cannabis products. I think that we deserve those type of applications at 2020 for sure. It's just that research definitely takes time, but I think that I'm very interested in the future and how cannabis will look like because yes, it's flower is something that's not very easy to control, and cannabis isn't really because of how complex it is. So it's really going to be exciting thinking about the future of applications in cannabis, 1,000%. I'm super geeky about that.
Absolutely. I was able to attend the Global Cannabis Institute in England, in London, last October, and there were several breakout panels about the epigenetics and growing certain strains for certain conditions, and then the reliability of that year to year, crop to crop. I mean, you'd really have to kind of compare this to wine in a way, right? Like a wine from spring of 2018 is going to be very different from the same land from when, spring of 2020. They're just going to be different harvests and yields. And once we isolate all of these different chemicals that contribute to a particular strain, how do you put them back together in a way that really mimics the entourage effect, but is reliable batch to batch, year to year? And I think there's some really interesting ethics to explore around that because you're getting into some pretty deep manipulation of the plant. And is that consistent with the therapy of the plant?
No, totally. Or just the life of the plant. It's such a way larger question for sure. That's interesting to delve into. So I guess you're obviously very in like on the forefront of cannabis research. Is there anything recently that has popped out for you, especially in terms of sexual health issues? Because as we know here at Pleasure Peaks, women's sexual health is the least funded area in the body when it comes to in terms of any research. So what are your thoughts are, what are you hearing really on sexual health and cannabis these days?
Well, I would say the most recent paper I've seen actually, unfortunately, was for this context, was looking at erectile dysfunction. But maybe that applies to us too in some other way. But in that same vein, it gets really ripe field for cannabinoid exploration just because there are so many more receptors in that female uterine tissue, right? Like this is an abundance that we don't see in the male specimen. So we're in a unique place to see how cannabinoids affect all of these diseases of female nature. And again, this is going to take time, but I think it's a really exciting time to be in. And in the meantime, we can rest confidently on the anecdotal evidence of all of these women that are saying that this is helping them with symptoms from perception of pain to inflammation that affects bleeding, which also affects perception of pain, to actually from that inflammation, then shrinking the size of, specifically I'm thinking of these endometrial tumors or fibroids, because that inflammation's gone down, the actual growth then decreases in size. And we're also seeing effects on hormones. So, it's multifaceted. But because we can touch on so many different components of physiology, I think that it can really affect women's health in a lot of different ways. So again, specifically for endometriosis, I think primarily it helps with women's perception of pain. So not to say that the pain of that endometriosis doesn't exist, not to say that that pain from the uterine lining discarding and, you're having blood into open abdominal space. It's caustic. It's not supposed to be there. We're not saying none of that's happening. But the way the plant's able to interact with your nervous system is that your perception of that pain is just altered slightly, and it allows you to get through your day a little bit better. And then over time, the long-term anti-inflammatory effects may actually lead to some change in the disease progression.
Beautiful. Thank you for sharing that with us. Because as you've mentioned, we hear so much anecdotal research all the time from women themselves. I have literally hundreds of emails of women just wanting to share their stories on cannabis and sex and how it's been incredibly beneficial for them. So it's definitely worth, you know, researching and finding new applications and just seeing how far it could really go in terms of having us have a better quality of life and a life but with more joy and pleasure. So it just all makes sense. And yeah, thank you for those tips, especially I love how you mentioned with long-term use of cannabis, the lessening of inflammation can definitely change the progression of that, right, of a specific ailment. That's super interesting to me. So thank you so much. We're always learning something every day here.
Absolutely. And I think I focused more on kind of the disease state and supporting sexual health just in general. We know that, especially in the topical application, we can get a lot more blood flow to the area, whether that's male or female, and really plump up that erogenous zone with vasodilation and getting more blood flow there. And in that increased blood flow, there's increased sensation. So, you know, there's true immediate topical benefits and then kind of more of those long-term disease progression or health and anti-inflammatory benefits.
Yeah, I love that little tip, the vasodilator.
Yeah, it works really well. And I think it's important to point out that the topical can give you those benefits or suppositories can give you benefits. Whereas if you're smoking, or have the edibles, some people really experience some of the dry mouth, and that can lead to dry pussy, as I have referenced in a few other podcast exchanges or been asked about. And I think that's a really common problem for people. They want to use cannabis, whether it's adult use, recreational, or medicinal, to release the pain and anxiety that they might have around an intimate encounter, whether it's with themselves or with a partner or others. And while the cannabis is great for helping them either dissociate or more integrate, depends on how you want to use it, they're left with dryness. And it's an expected and known side effect when consumed either by smoking or through an edible. And so we can combat that either with tolerance, really just kind of a lot of use and your body kind of gets used to that, or making sure you're extremely well hydrated prior to your play session, and then making sure you have access to adequate lube for whatever you want to be doing in terms of your intimate encounter. And that can also include then some of those other cannabinoids to help with that vasodilation in those topical areas in your erogenous zones. And that can be nipple, that can be labial tissue, that can be penile or rectal tissue. You can really use that anywhere you're seeking additional blood flow.
Yeah, I love that. Just so you guys who are listening, if you haven't heard the vasodilator, but with the kind of the rule of thumb that we've always been saying is that Viagra is a vasodilator, which helps promote blood flow. And when cannabis used topically, it could really help bring that blood flow to the vulva or the penis, which is amazing. But when consuming through inhalation, like smoking a joint, you can very easily get cotton mouth or cotton pussy, like you mentioned. So that's such a huge misconception that I hear people, you know, come up to me all the time being like, we wanted to try cannabis and sex and it didn't work.
It didn't work for us. And it's not to say that risk to benefit ratio shouldn't be considered, but sometimes a little bit of preparation can help you get over what was a perceived
totally, you know, and knowledge is
barrier.
Knowledge is key to make smarter choices. So now that they know that.
And then just so, you know, for your audience listening, I think it's essential to point out consent in using these products if you are in a partnered or, you know, partied situation. So if you are using topical or you've had an edible or smoking, or basically if you're consuming anything in general with THC, that needs to be something you share with your partner, party, et cetera, the people sharing your intimate encounter, you can transfer the THC into them, into their blood system. And if they're tested, they could come up positive. So this needs to be something that if you're using in an intimate setting, and there are other people around, that that's consensual for all involved.
Most definitely. And I think when we talk about consent in cannabis, it's always like, obviously consent is so important, but it's always like, is it the new party drug, you know, that's going to have people just sleeping with each other and like not understanding or not really giving the what's it called, the responsibility of the act, right? Like drinking. And you know, I think cannabis, you can definitely feel intoxicating when consuming too much THC. Although consent is always necessary. And with cannabis, makes it no different, especially now that we're choosing to have this drug and share it with each other. Mm-hmm. So it would only make more sense to have more clear consent in these types of scenarios. And honestly, consent is sexy. Like, I don't like that consent isn't a sexy word, but like it totally is. When you have consent with a partner, even if you've been together for how many years, like, I don't care, asking them to really take it the next step is just even sexy. It's like almost dirty talk. So have fun with it. Just be open and honest. That's really the
point. And be comfortable. I'm sure you're familiar with, we say start low and slow with your dosing, right? Mm-hmm. And I feel like for the cannabis and sex conversation, we could add start low, slow, and solo. You know, if this is something with which you're unfamiliar, probably not best to start it with a new partner first sexual encounter, right? You should have an idea of how you're going to respond, and how your body's going to respond. And that needs to happen in a really safe space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I find that the first experience should always be playful, you know, like just lower the expectations. Expectations ruin everything, but just enjoying the ride and the beautiful experience that cannabis can have will definitely help you out there for sure.
Low and slow. And if you feel like things are getting a little overwhelming, CBD can help combat that.
Yes, most definitely. I love CBD, and I have definitely been there when I've been maybe at like another edible dinner where they put way too much THC in six courses or something, but I always have CBD on hand just to mitigate that effect, mm-hmm. of not having the green out for sure, because mm-hmm. it's not fun.
No.
Yeah. So just curious for our followers, we want to know, what is your favorite strain and why, and how do you personally like to consume, or do you?
I would say, off the top of my head, a strain coast to coast that I think is impressive and noteworthy is the AK-47.
Strain.
And from California days, it's just a dispensary favorite for me. Really helped with body pain, but also I wasn't couch locked. I could be productive or study or go for a bike ride or something like that. So that's a nice blend for me. And again, everybody's going to respond different. So it might be a couch lock for you. I don't know. And then in terms of now in my life, I would say it's more about like bath soaks or CBD chocolates. You know, my needs have really shifted medicinally just as my diet has shifted.
And that's
changed my consumption. But
I love the bath salts. Like, they're
I find
good.
That a really effective way. And then topicals, like a salve, mm-hmm. if I've got more kind of spot pain that I want to address.
Exactly.
Deep respect and love for the whole flower, and always will.
Of course. Yeah. I love the bath salts. I think they're so underrated. I feel that they are just so much more effective and relaxing than any other bath salt. You just come out with your arms feeling like noodles.
Yeah. And super floppy and
flexible.
I think it's a great way to detox. You know, the magnesium is very effective. I think they're a nice pairing.
Exactly.
So that's one of my favorite ways.
And I still am pretty heavy into my yoga practice. So I love the spot treatments of just a topical, just to relax my muscles and go a little bit deeper before and after. Mm-hmm. So definitely a huge fan of that. So thank you so much for an awesome episode. This has been so juicy. Do you have any last tips for our listeners?
You know, I think in this time of quarantine and prioritizing health and self and really having time to do that, honoring that mind, body, soul, or spirit connection, yeah, and seeking joy. And if that's physical joy, if that's smoking a blunt over FaceTime with your best friend, if that's reading a book, if that's having your bath soak, if that's sex, whatever it is that helps you smile from deep within is genuinely changing the neurochemical pathways and therefore the soup in which you live. And all of that affects your immunity and your inflammation and your overall health. So I think the thing I'd love to leave myself and you and all of these beautiful people sharing their time and energy listening to your work and your passion is to seek a little joy today.
Yes, exactly. Thank you so much for ending us off in that energy. Definitely using this quarantine to get back to myself, my inner self, my offerings and services. And yeah, I hope that everybody else is taking the time that they need these during this quarantine and yeah, taking advantage of it. Mm-hmm. Where can people find you? Want to let us know?
You can find me on Instagram at Dr. Caroline Hartridge and Facebook, same tag, Dr. Caroline Hartridge. Or you can just Google Dr. Caroline Hartridge. And then my website is drhartridge.com. So you can find all about my practice and the product line from those places.
Amazing. Thank you so much for an epic episode. This has been an amazing, almost an hour that we've been talking. So thank you so much.
Thank you for the opportunity. Sincerely.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Carolyn. Thank you, listeners. Thank you for listening to a whole other episode. I'm so excited for the next one we have coming up. We have Ashley Athill. She owns a micro grow here in Canada, and she's an epic boss, but she is also, she also deals with fibroids and talks about cannabis treatments a lot. So we'll get into that. So if you're interested, keep tuning in, keep your joint rolling, and yeah, we'll see you next time, guys. Thank you. Bye.